This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to episode 9 of the Hockey News Podcast. This week, we're joined by Nashville Predators left winger Philip Forsberg to talk about his breakout season and what his favorite fast food chain is. Later, the Hockey News gang will discuss the race for 30th place in the NHL, the Ottawa Senators, what's wrong with the Chicago Blackhawks, and list the first round playoff series we most want to see.
We got a great guest on the show today, one of the hottest players in the NHL right now, the left winger from the Nashville Predators, the first Predator to score 30 goals since 2010. Very happy to welcome Mr. Philip Forsberg. Hey, Philip, how you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having me here.
It's a pleasure. Well, first of all, I'm not sure if you're aware, but you are 4 goals away right now from setting a Predators single-season franchise record. First of all, do you know who has the record? Can you guess?
I think it's Jason Arnott, but I'm not 100% sure.
Very good. You got it. Jason Arnott. So I think you answered my next question, which is just, is it something you've thought about before and is it on your mind knowing that you're so close?
We actually got these like posters outside the locker room where we play soccer, so I think that's why I know it. Because whenever you're out in soccer, you just read those to waste time to get back in.
Oh, really?
With you, but yeah, but I've obviously seen the poster, but it's nothing that I really thought about until basically now, and you mentioned it for me.
Good to know. With the season you're having right now, and you had a great rookie year as well, do you ever think about being drafted by Washington and being traded, and is there a part of you that sort of feels, yeah, that's right, you shouldn't have traded me when you do this well?
No, not really. I mean, I've always been really determined to work really hard to get, to play in the NHL, and obviously the plan was to play for the Washington, but that changed very quickly, and obviously I think it was obviously a way easier time to get traded before you even got to North America and started, making adjustments and stuff like that, moving to Washington and stuff like that, than if you would have been playing there already and maybe moving your family and stuff like that. So for that reason, I think it was pretty obviously way easier to get traded before you got started than, once you're all settled in there.
Now, obviously, the Stanley Cup is the first priority for you this year, but we also have the World Cup of Hockey coming up in the summer. What was it like being named to that first roster of 16 for Team Sweden, a team that obviously is going to be very strong at that tournament?
Yeah, it was obviously a big honor to just be in the same team as all these great players and great legends that I've been growing up watching and just trying to, basically that's why I'm playing hockey, just because I would like to watch a few of these guys growing up. And I mean, it's obviously pretty unbelievable to be able to be a part of the same team as them.
Philip, I had a chance to get to Nashville for the All-Star game a couple months ago, and I loved the food. I checked out Hattie B's Hot Chicken and Puckett's Grocer. So I'm just wondering, have you been to those places, or do you have another one that's a favorite?
I haven't been to those two you said, actually, so I might have to look it up. But there's, as you mentioned, there's a lot of good stuff to eat, and obviously a lot of southern food like hot chicken, stuff like that's just really special for Nashville that people should try.
Is the chicken your favorite, or is there another dish that you go for?
That's probably my favorite, I would say.
And here's a question. I've been to the Sweden for the World Juniors. Do you prefer Max Burger or McDonald's?
I prefer Max Burger, actually. I miss it a lot when we don't have it over here.
There you go. Speaking of Sweden, I know we did a feature on you in the magazine, I believe it was last year, where Ken Campbell was talking to you about the trips that you and Mattias Ekholm sometimes make to places like IKEA and things like that to sort of get back in touch with your Swedish roots. Do you still do those little tours with Mattias?
Yeah, we did. We did it last year. We went to IKEA right before Christmas to get some specialties like Christmas food, and we did the same trip this year. Actually, we brought Jan Krook this time too, so we added one more guy to the crew.
Nice,
Philip. We got the playoffs coming up pretty soon, and last year as rookie, you had 4 goals in 6 games. Do you think of yourself as a big game player already, and do you sort of get up for big games more than regular games, or do you sort of think of yourself as a guy who can bring it the same way every night?
I mean, I think obviously I was happy with my performance in the playoffs last year, and I think our team was happy with the performance. But obviously, we couldn't. I mean, we played a great Chicago Blackhawks team there too, and I think, I mean, if we would have won that match series, and you never know what could have happened. I mean, they went all the way, and I mean, I think we had a pretty good chance of doing that as well if we could have beat them in the first round. And obviously, I mean, it's obviously you can't say it's not going to be special playing the playoffs. I mean, every player obviously gears up for every game, but the playoffs is going to be something extra. And obviously, you want to play your best in the best and biggest games. And hopefully, I mean, I'm really looking forward to getting another shot at playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's for sure.
Now, playoffs are already underway back home in Sweden with the SHL, and I know you played for Leksand, and it was a big honor for you to help Leksand get up to the SHL at the time. They are fighting to get back to that top rung as we speak. Are you paying attention to how the Stars are doing?
Yeah, we're watching. Me and I got two buddies here in town actually, so we were watching the game online last night. It was probably at 12:30 here in Nashville, so it was a tough loss. But I mean, they're struggling. They're playing a team from the top league, playing Modo, another historical team. So it's got to be tough. But it's still best out of seven. So they're down 2-0, off to a pretty tough start. But you never know.
Well, Philip, great having you on. Really appreciate you calling in and chatting with us. And good luck going forward with the stretch run with the Preds.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Welcome once again to the THN podcast. I'm Ryan Kennedy here with Matt Larkin, Ian Denemy, and on the phone, Jared Clinton. It's about that time, people. Regular season is winding down, and if your team plays in Canada, you don't care about the playoffs as much because your team won't be in them. But we do have that tank battle at the bottom. The prize is Austin Matthews in the draft lottery, but the prizes are also Patrick Laine and Jesse Puljujärvi. There will be 3 lottery selections made this summer. Let's get to that 30th pick overall, or that 30th place overall. Right now, the Toronto Maple Leafs are in last. However, they have games in hand on the Edmonton Oilers. Looking at the schedule, I would say the Oilers have tougher sledding, although they do end with Calgary and Vancouver back-to-back. The Canucks, I can't imagine, are really going to show up for those games. So, who you got in the tank battle?
Well, I'll lead it off. First of all, advertising plug, I really think they should start marketing this like a monster truck rally, Tank Wars, but, you know, Edmonton Oilers, Toronto Maple Leafs, Tank Wars!
Tank Wars! Tank Wars!
Why not? May as well embrace it. I just feel this inevitability about the Edmonton Oilers. It's just coming closer and closer, and it's upsetting me. And I always say, I know it's our job to be objective, but there's one exception. I refuse to be objective about the draft lottery because it's just too damn boring if the Oilers win it again. But I can feel it. It's coming. The team seems to have checked out yet again. It doesn't seem to matter that they changed a lot of their personnel. I'm at a loss. But I can just feel it in my bones right now. It's the Oilers. Come on. Let's face it, guys. It's the Oilers.
Kind of along the same lines, like the way you think it's just going to be Edmonton, I just have this feeling that it's going to be Toronto. It just seems like it's a fait accompli almost. They've waited so long for something like this to happen that eventually it's actually going to, and we're not going to know what to do with ourselves. And it feels like this is going to be finally that year where the Leafs get that big pick, that first overall pick, and they get a franchise player. I just have that feeling that it's going to be Toronto that wins this.
It's a funny feeling because we're so used to the Leafs doing everything wrong, and suddenly this year they're doing everything right. Other than the last couple weeks, they've been winning. They're actually hurting their chances at getting that first pick because they brought up all these kids. William Nylander's been really good. They're playing themselves out of 30th, but if they still get that first pick, it would just be another checkmark to everything that's gone right since Brendan Shanahan took over.
And maybe there's a bit of karma in that. We see them bringing up players that, they want to give them tryouts. And, not only Nylander, but Zach Hyman has been producing. Martin Marincin, he wasn't just called up, but he's playing more minutes now. He's kind of become the cause celeb in the Toronto media right now, since Mike Babcock is a big fan. The analytics show that Martin Marincin is actually a very useful player, even though he is a little understated. Nikita Soshnikov, before he got banged up, he was playing really well. So, I mean, if the Leafs did win, maybe it's sort of a sign that, you know, even if you are rebuilding, put your best foot forward, because that's the reason we did this lottery, and it is only 20% chance if you do finish 30th that you'll get that number one pick. So you might as well at least try.
And I like the message that the Leafs sent by choosing to burn that first year of William Nylander's contract, his entry-level deal. To me, what they said by doing that is, hey, you know what? We want to give you this extra 10 or 12 games to get your feet wet, because we care about competing as early as next season. I think they're a sneaky sleeper pick to be a lot better than people realize, because all those underlying numbers favor them. Like you talked about, Marincin's possession stats and the entire team's possession stats, they all look good. The shooting percentage is the worst in the NHL. The power play efficiency is the worst in the NHL. But those are two categories that are going to skyrocket once the most talented players on the team are there full time. You never know. Maybe Mitch Marner plays his way onto the team next year, or at least gets a 9-game tryout. We can see what he can do. So it is interesting. And to me, it does sort of tell us that the Leafs, yes, everyone wants to see them, at least Leaf Nation, they want it to be the year. But if they don't win the lottery, it's not an utter disaster.
And I think you need to show fans that there's something to look forward to next season, because the Leafs are upping ticket prices again next year. And in Winnipeg, like, they're having trouble selling tickets, but on the real resale market, it used to be like pulling teeth to get a seat to the game. But now there's more tickets available than there ever has. And I think, I don't want to say the bloom's gone off the rose already, but, you know, you need to kind of sell some excitement here down the stretch, and putting the young players in Toronto especially, is kind of selling that excitement. And I think in Winnipeg, too, you're seeing a lot of young guys come up, and I think you still need to give fans a reason to cheer for and come out to the games. I think that's kind of important in selling next season, even if you do get the first overall pick.
Now, Jared, you are based in Winnipeg. The rest of us are in Toronto. What's the vibe around the Jets right now, just in terms of how this season has turned out? And let's not forget, I mean, the Jets could win the lottery too. I mean, they're going to be in the mix. Their odds won't be as good. But how are people feeling about this organization? Things were really sunny last year.
I think the only word is like utter disappointment.
That's two words,
Jared. I don't think anybody expected to step back this far. And I don't really think, I honestly don't think it was so much, going to happen this way all the time. I don't really think the step back was something that anyone could have foreseen. It kind of looked like the Jets were trending in the right direction. So I understand the disappointment. I don't understand giving up on the team quite yet, which seems to be the case with a lot of people. I mean, giving up on this season for sure, but giving up in the future, this team still has so much going for it and so much to look forward to that it baffles me when I hear stories or read stories about people being able to get tickets with relative ease now. But I just think, like I said, people need a reason to be excited about this team, and they just don't have one or can't find one right now.
And I agree with you, Jared, and you know, for our sake, for the sake of our egos at THN, we do hope the Jets get better sooner, because they were on the cover of our Future Watch issue last year as your 2019 Stanley Cup champions.
Still time,
and I'm going to turn that into a positive. There's a reason why we anointed them in advance, because the farm system is so good. They still have more great players to come. I'm looking at especially Kyle Connor. He's super fast. We had him on the podcast before, actually, a great prospect. And to me, especially Connor Hellebuyck and Nett, they're sort of stuck with this Albatross contract, Andrei Pavelec forcing to start him, keeping Hellebuyck in the AHL to get more starts, but he's really proven that he's already good enough to be an NHL goaltender, probably good enough to be an NHL starter. He's a super confident young kid, and he's a big reason why next year, I believe, if they find a way to give him a chance to start the year in the NHL, the Jets are going to be a lot better than people think. They're a team, to me, they're almost the opposite of that team that sort of arrives early, let's say like Ottawa last year. To me, the Jets, they took a little step back, but I think the true Jets were closer to what we saw last year, and I do expect them to be much better next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. That's exactly it. And you mentioned Kyle Connor, and people here, I don't think, realize what they have in Kyle Connor yet, but I think once he signs and once he does show up, I think people are going to get really excited about him, maybe like they haven't been about a prospect since Shrakely was drafted and came in.
Now, you mentioned Ottawa, Matt. That's another topic we wanted to jump on Eugene Melnyk, the owner, basically said the other day, no one is safe. And a lot of people took that to mean that his longtime friend and employee, Dave Cameron, might be on the outs as head coach. What do we make of the Senators and how they have fared this season?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Dave Cameron, and it's a speculative question, but I'm curious what you guys think. Do you think that the Paul McLean situation has repeated itself? Because a couple of years ago, McLean won the Jack Adams Award, then there were reports out of the room the next year that he sort of went mad with power, his personality changed, and last season, Cameron, along with Andrew Hammond, was this sort of savior who rode in and won over the team, helped them make that miracle run to the playoffs, and we see his personality. He's sort of a prickly guy. And I just wonder, did the success last year go to his head? Do you think he's lost that room? I don't know. I really don't know. What do you guys think?
I just don't think the team last year was as good as, you know, that run they went on. And I think this is more a realistic showing of what kind of team the Senators are than the team that went on that incredible run to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the Senators are kind of right where they should be. And again, I always go back to, what does your depth chart look like down the middle? And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're going to win a cup, you need a number one center, a number one D-man, and a number one goalie. You look at Ottawa, okay, they've got the defenseman. Erik Karlsson, one of the best in the league, and at least in terms of his offensive capabilities, and that's a podcast unto itself for another day. In goal, Craig Anderson, who sometimes is electric, sometimes is just okay.
And other times is hurt.
And then your number one center, right now it's Kyle Turris, although right now he's injured, so he's not even helping you right now. But for me, Kyle Turris is more of a number two center. I almost see him like the Tyler Bozak of Ottawa, where, you know, he can play that number one role, but you're probably not getting too far if he is your number one guy, but still an above average NHLer, and on, you know, a really good team, he would be your number two center. So for me, it's like, what could be the ceiling for this Ottawa team? Right now, as it's composed, you know, unless you see big jumps from Mika Zibanejad, from Curtis Lazar, from Cody Ceci on the blue line, I'm not really sure what they are other than first or second round playoff fodder at best.
Yeah, I think you're right. This is what the Senators are. They get kind of these, not so much a flash in the pan, but they have one guy get hot and carry them into a playoff round. If you look at their last four seasons, they're just a 7th to 12th place team. But what I also think is interesting about this situation is something we don't see in the NHL very much, which is the meddling owner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to say that Eugene Melnyk is a Jerry Jones or anything like that, but you don't see in the NHL owners calling out management, players, coaches, not that I can think of at least.
Yeah, and it's funny, you talked about Dave Cameron. I'm not sure if it's the same as Paul McLean, because in my dealings with Dave Cameron, he seems like a super level, like almost to a hilarious point kind of guy, very low key, and he is prickly in terms of scrums. But you know, their special teams are a disaster this year, and you know, somebody has to answer for that, whether that's Cameron or, you know, one of his assistant or associate coaches. You know, that's for the exit meetings to determine this year, but. You know, if I were to defend Dave Cameron, I would say, how much could he really get out of this team this year?
Right, and it's interesting.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Oh, sorry there, Jared. It's interesting too when we talk about the ceiling of Ottawa's best young prospects, because they do have a lot of potential from guys like Zibanejad, Mark Stone, but to me, they all are sort of in that B plus range in terms of their ceiling. So it sort of makes me wonder, do the Senators have to get worse in order to get better? And what I'm getting at is, do you have to explore trading someone like a Bobby Ryan? See if you could, maybe you'd have to eat some of that salary, $7.5 million cap hit. But do you try and trade a big name like that to get another draft pick, another first round pick maybe, and take another swing at the fences? Because what Ottawa does need is that bona fide true number one center. With respect to Curtis Lazar, there's still a lot of time for him to become a good player, but I think if he was going to be a true alpha dog number one, a Ryan Getzlaff, a Jonathan Toews, we would already see it. So I do think Ottawa needs it.
I think the worry, too, too, is if you try and move someone out, are you wasting years of Carlson's career? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not getting any younger. He's not old right now, but if he gets much older, if he starts getting hurt, you never know what can pop up, and it's scary. It's a big time risk to take a step backwards in order to take one forward when you've got a guy who's arguably the best defenseman in the league right now.
Yeah, and I would say the best long term hope for Ottawa right now is Colin White. Having an amazing freshman season at Boston College, his ceiling is Patrice Bergeron. He is that exemplary two-way center. He's really fast. You know, he can certainly put up points. Him and Ryan Fitzgerald, the Boston pick, have been really good for the Eagles. But you're not getting Colin White next year. You're going to get Colin White, you know, in a couple of years, and even then, you got to give him a season or two to really get up to speed. So to Jared's point, you know, where's Erik Karlsson in 3-4 years versus where he is now? Where's Dion Phaneuf at that point in time when Colin White is ready to be that? You know, if you have Colin White and, say, Curtis Lazar, if you still have Kyle Turris, then you can do that Bruins, you know, Bergeron, David Krejci thing where you don't need to have the Anže Kopitar, the Jonathan Toews. You've got sort of the 1A, 1B combination where White takes on the opposing top checkers and still contributes, and Lazar slash Turris can do a bit more scoring with, say, you know, Hoffman and Stone and guys like that. Or, you know, and, you know, where does Zibanejad fit in that scenario as well?
Let's move on and talk about the Chicago Blackhawks. They're in a bit of a tailspin right now. Jared, you wrote about the Blackhawks for the website, so we'll start with you. Is it time to worry about the Blackhawks?
I think if it was time to worry about them, it was time to worry about them maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, because right now this team looks more destined to end up out of the first round than they do to win, I'd even say, 2 or 3 games in the first round. I was doing some digging on the underlying numbers, and since Quenneville took over, this is the worst possession team, like Corsi 4 percentage, hands down worst team Quenneville's had. Worst shooting percentage team, worst scoring chances for, high danger scoring chances for, and it's the third worst penalty killing team he's had. In almost every defensive area of the game, the Blackhawks look lost lately. It's frightening to think that this team could have taken such a big step backwards in such a short period of time, but it kind of reminds me of the 2010-11 team that lost in the first round of Vancouver. There's some eerie similarities as far as the power play and penalty kill go. That power play was red hot. The power play this year is red hot. Penalty killing was terrible. Penalty killing this year is terrible. So the same issues are there that were there in 2010-11. I think, you know, Corey Crawford has played outstanding, and he's arguably been the MVP, even though Patrick Kane's probably the stronger heart candidate. But I think even getting Crawford back, even getting Marcus Kruger back, it's just too little too late, and a team that has way too many issues right now that go beyond getting back two players that are going to help defensively.
I think you've really nailed it on the head, Jared, and especially with the possession correlation, we've seen it time and again. The last 5-7 Cup champions are always top five in Corsi, including all three of the Hawks championships, and they're not in that category this year. And I'm really wondering about their blue line. To me, it's been the sore spot all year. They let Johnny Oduya walk in free agency, and I feel like they've been playing catch-up all year, trying to force square pegs into a round hole on that second pairing. And it's nothing against Trevor Van Riemsdyk. He's an NHL-caliber defenseman. But to me, it seems like Joel Quenneville keeps trying to shoehorn him in to that second pair when it's just not meant to be. Do you guys think that's the Achilles heel right now, more than anything else, that second pair? The fourth defenseman. They've still got three good defensemen, but that fourth guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think last year you saw it when they didn't make it as far as they did. They won the Cup with four defensemen. I mean, they played David Rundblad when they had to. When TVR came back in the final, they played him. But Michael Roosevelt can't keep up anymore, and the minutes he's been asked of so far, he just hasn't been successful in them. Like you said about TVR, he's got some skills that you can't teach. Obviously, he's got the size and the reach. But sometimes he just looks lost. And Erik Gustafsson, he's been okay. He's been okay, and at times he looks great. But he makes some strange decisions sometimes, and it's surprising that Quenneville's given him as long a leash as he has. And it's just kind of confounding a little bit that the Blackhawks go out and get Christian Ehrenhoff, who could be a legitimate fourth option, maybe not the best fourth option, but at least stronger and with some experience. and he's not getting anywhere near the minutes, and he's getting scratched when guys like Gustafson and TVR are flying over top of him. So it's just the blue line is a really big concern, and I think depth scoring too just compounds how many issues there are in Chicago right now when they're trying to chase a second title in a row.
What's fascinating to me right now is the Blackhawks have been so good for so long that when I look at that Central Division playoff bracket, it's hard for me to wrap my head around, like, if the Hawks played Dallas, you know, you would think that it's like, well, Chicago's been there so many times before, you know, Dallas, their goaltending, we're not really sure. But, I mean, if you were just to look at those two teams on paper and take away the names and the logos, I mean, like, Dallas should win that series. They've got the better possession numbers. They've certainly got, you know, some great firepower up front. They have some, you know, some depth on D. It's hard to wrap your head around Dallas beating Chicago, but I mean, they just, you know, handed it to the Hawks the other night again. So it's not like there's any sort of psychological barrier for the Stars, at least in the regular season. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, if it came down to those two teams playing either in the first or second round, if the Stars actually could handle Chicago, or do we get into a scenario where that kind of playoff fairy dust once again gets sprinkled on the Hawks and they squeak one out just enough to get that momentum?
It's funny, maybe Dallas's secret strategy is to gradually eat the Chicago Blackhawks and envelop pieces of them, because they can say, now we have Patrick Schaap, now we have Johnny Oduya, now we have Antti Niemi, all standing. I don't know why Dallas is also Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. It just felt right in the moment. But it is interesting. In all seriousness, though, I mean, assuming Tyler Seguin is healthy enough to play, the Stars are going to be a threat. The one thing I worry about with them is just lack of number one goaltender, right? They're stuck in between with Niemi and Kari Lehtinen, and I've been quoting this stat a lot that I found when I was digging around as we put together our playoff preview, but it's six of the past seven Stanley Cup winning goalies have won all 16 of the team's games, and in the last 25 years, we've seen 25 straight years where the Cup champion had one goalie win at least 13 of the 16 games you need to win to get the Cup. So to me, it just sort of says in a circumstantial kind of way that the 1A, 1B, just it doesn't work. And to me, it's a psychological thing where if you're in the same thing with Brian Elliott in St. Louis and Jake Allen, it could be a problem in Anaheim too. If you're in the first period of Game 1 and you're Antti Niemi, you're thinking, okay, if I give up three goals in the first period of Game 1, I'm getting hooked and I'm not starting the next game. Whereas Jonathan Quick is not thinking that, or Corey Crawford is not thinking that. I do think that's a potential problem for Dallas.
Okay, on that note, let's move on, wrap things up by talking about potential first-round playoff series we most want to see. Go.
Well, I'll go with Washington and Pittsburgh. I think, you know, Pittsburgh could end up with one of those wild card slots, and maybe it's just because I enjoy chaos, but the idea of the, you know, this year's Eastern Conference favorites in the Caps having to go against their old rivals in Pittsburgh and Sidney Crosby, and obviously Crosby's hot right now. The Penguins are looking like they're going in the right direction. The idea of that being the first round matchup, I know that's kind of a nightmare for people who would want to see that, you know, later on, or would want to see Washington and Pittsburgh go a couple of rounds, but I mean, that would be just like Titanic television. That would be like huge, must see. I have to imagine it's going seven games, and I wouldn't even want to gamble on, you know, who would win them.
I wouldn't mind seeing a possible L.A. Chicago first round series, and with the way Nashville's playing, they could possibly overtake Chicago for that third spot in the Central and bump the Blackhawks down to a wild card spot. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. It would be tough for it to happen, but it'd be interesting to see. And I you have to imagine if the Kings are going to win the Stanley Cup this year, everyone figured it would go through Chicago. So it'd be interesting to see them get it out of the way right away and play the Blackhawks, you know, first round, to get everyone really into the playoffs right away.
Those are both very sexy picks. I'm going to go with a shout-out to the Snowbirds And I want to see the Battle of Florida. I want to see Tampa Bay, Florida for the first time in NHL history. A couple cool storylines. Obviously, there's the win it for Jagr. There's the win it for Kevin Spacey storyline, apparently. Whoa. You know he would be, Mr. Frank Underwood would be very involved, I'm sure, as a fan now that he's become their unofficial mascot. And to me, it would be very interesting because it wouldn't be the easiest draw for Tampa Bay. I would still favor the Lightning in the series, but if they draw a tough first-round matchup, if they bomb out early, to me, the earlier they bomb out, the more likely it is that Steven Stamkos leaves in free agency. So to me, that's an interesting storyline.
And you know who would love that series? Every national sports writer that there is. They're like, oh, we have to spend the entire series in Florida, and we can drive back and forth? I guess I'll have to take that assignment. Sorry, Pittsburgh, Washington, or St. Louis, Dallas.
And on a similar note, I'll say Anaheim and San Jose, just because whatever the first-round matchup ends up being in the Pacific Division, it's going to be, again, a titanic matchup. You've got three teams there that are all, I think, legitimate Stanley Cup contenders, and at least one of them is going to be gone by the second round, and potentially two of them by the third round. Good teams. Now, that said, those games will be up way past my bedtime. But I will look forward to seeing the highlights the next morning.
And whoever loses is just going to curl up in the fetal position, because whether you're the Sharks or the Ducks, you think, like, this has got to be our year, and it could be done in six or seven games.
And it's interesting because, to me, they seem to be on a collision course. I'm just looking at the standings here, and LA does have a four-point cushion right now. So for Ian, it's almost like you experienced what it was like to be Aladdin, because you wish for something, and it's almost happening instantly before your eyes. Not quite yet, but it's going to take something crazy for that series not to happen in the first round.
And now no one has to worry about coming to Winnipeg in the first round.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ryan talked about how great it would be to be in Florida, but we're also talking about April here. It's not like you get that Florida trip in January or February coming from, you know, Toronto or Winnipeg.
That is true.
I had a trip from hell when I was 5 years old. I went to Disney World in Florida in late March, early April, and there were record low temperatures. I cried a lot, and
did your tears freeze?
They almost did, and I lost my Donald Duck hat. It was a nightmare. Absolute nightmare. On that note, thanks for listening, guys. Don't go to Disney World anytime soon. Wait till it's June, and that wraps up the podcast for this week.